we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with the cutting scene in the Washington Chronicle, read by Rory Morrison.
In New York State, an inebriated 55-year-old man drove his car into a ditch, but was unharmed. He slowly climbed back up the slope and onto the highway, where he was immediately hit by a car being driven by his drunken wife.
Thanks to Kate Vogel from Sidcup for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. And opposite them on my left, Sandy Toksvig and Barry Cryer. Andy, which good neighbour has popped in to help out with a top-up?
Yes, this is tuition fees, presumably. Mm-hmm. And sadly, it's beginning to look as if the backbench Labour rebellion we've all been looking forward to so much might not happen. And I blame Michael Howard. Isn't it nice to be able to say that again after all these years? I blame Michael Howard. In the old days, when Ian Duncan thingamy was in charge of the Conservatives, you know, 300 Labour backbenchers could safely rebel against the Prime Minister in the knowledge that the Tory leader wouldn't be able to capitalise on that. But now, of course, they're up against Michael Howard. He's a much more predatory and sinister force. And I don't know if you noticed that you can always tell if Michael Howard is on his feet speaking in the House of Commons, because no birds fly overhead. All across London. It looks very much as if, in the light of the prospect of a leader who would capitalise on embarrassment for the Labour leader, that the backbenchers are sort of losing a bit of their resolve.
I'm still cross with Michael Howard for saying that he thinks the people should be big.
There's something of the big about him, isn't there?
There is.
He can light up a room just by moving away from the window. Sorry, Andy.
Barry, a little note for you. Never, ever apologise. Just be louder.
Okay.
As Tony Blair made his latest speech in an attempt to woo the rebels, the Chancellor was at long last coming to his aid by giving his full backing to university tuition fees. Contrary to rumours, Gordon has always been eager to help his neighbour out. Last year, he not only helped the PM when the hot water in his bath wasn't working, he even offered to throw in an electric fire for free. Linda, who's been bushwhacked by some treasured recollections?
Ah, well, this is W, who's had some trouble with this chap Paul O'Neill, who was a former Treasury Secretary in the American government. And now he's sort of saying, well, Bush wanted to get rid of Saddam from the word go, and 9/11 was just an excuse, and Bush has sort of tried to sort of ignore it, really, and talk about the moon instead, really. He's sort of about how very important it is that America keeps on going to the moon. I think they need the cheese.
The notion that it was a revelation to everybody that George Bush never liked Saddam. This suggests there was a honeymoon period. It seems appropriate, though, that George Bush has figured he's made a mess of the planet Earth. Now Mars.
I was watching daytime TV today.
Don't tell everybody.
Yeah, I was. And they got very excited at NASA because they got the first pictures back from Mars.
I love the idea of the Americans are all at Mars, you know, looking for life, and there's Andy watching daytime television looking for Kilroy.
President Bush has been accused of planning the war against Iraq within days of becoming president. Bush spent the first 100 days plotting to invade Iraq. Not, as everyone thought, trying to count the four walls in the Oval Office as his predecessor had dared him to. Barry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Can I apologise for hogging this programme?
It is your first time on the show.
No, I did it years ago.
When was that?
I can't remember. Oh, the chairman I remember, Lord Reith.
Barry, trying to be controversial when everyone thinks you're a racist?
Ah, now, this must be a reference to Robert Kilroy Silk, the Cuprinol kid. A hard man to ignore, but it's worth the effort. the kid wrote an article for the Sun Express in April of last year, which proved so popular they repeated it. What he actually meant to submit was a very liberal, low-key article about immigration, I believe. 2 points, thank you. I once did his programme, actually, by a strange coincidence.
I knew there was an anecdote in there somewhere.
I knew. You knew, didn't you? I once did his programme years ago, and by a strange synchronicity, the subject was racist jokes. And I spoke out against all the disgusting stuff that we no longer did. But I had to point out that there was then a trend for young stand-ups to do anti-Australian jokes. But I like the retaliatory story I heard, that Sir Robert Fellows, former secretary to Her Madge, was down in Australia and went through customs at Sydney Airport. And he handed over his passport, and under occupation he'd put courtier. And the guy handed it back to him and said, "There's no tea in courier, mate."
Robert Kilroy Silk has been suspended from the BBC after allegedly making racist remarks about Arabs in his Sunday Express column. On his show, he asked, "What have the Arabs ever done for us?" Unfortunately, none of the daycare patients in the audience had the nous to answer, "What, medicine, philosophy, mathematics, architecture, and being the cradle of civilization?" Sandy, listen to this. Sandy, whose fine day led to a speedy U-turn?
This is the brilliant and extremely liberal Home Secretary. What a fine fellow he is. And he's now decided that what's going to happen is we're all going to pay £5 fines for everything. It's £5 more expensive to speed, it's £5 if you're drunk, it's £5 if you throw fireworks, and it's £5 if you phone 999 unnecessarily. And if you do them all at the same time, that's £20. Did you see that the new motorway, the M62, the toll road,
yes,
has been reduced with cones after 10 days of being open to a single lane? Some problem with the surface. Now, that's all there is on a road, I would have thought.
Do you want to hear a story about the M25, which is vaguely relevant, I think? Yeah. There's a car going 25 miles an hour in the fast lane on the M25. And the cops pull it in, and the cop said, "What are you doing?" And the guy said, "It's the M25, 25 miles an hour. He said, no, you can do 50 here, 70 up the road. What are you on about?" And he looked in the back seat, and there was another man frozen in horror like Munch's scream. And he said to the driver, "What's wrong with him?" He said, "We've just come off the B128.
Going back to Blunkett,
absolutely.
All those eons ago.
Never mind Blunkett. Let's just have an audience with Barry Crumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Barry, weren't you speeding once on the way to a meeting with Tommy Cooper? Tell us about that.
Funny you should say that, Linda. Tommy was talking about his army service.
No, Linda said that as a joke, Barry.
Claims this was just one of a raft of taxes and charges planned by the government were confirmed when it was revealed that John Prescott has already had to pay £2,450 as part of a pilot of the new sitting around scratching your arse all day taxes. We start round two with an item from the Leicester Mercury.
Leicester Mercury readers have helped to give 25 pensioners a day to remember by treating them to a fantastic gourmet meal. We'd like to thank ABC Taxis, Minibus Express, and Swift Funeral Services for their help in transporting the pensioners.
Thanks to David Kitto and Barwell for that. Andy, why doesn't tennis add up for Tim Henman?
Is this a story about Greg Rosetsky? Sorry.
Only if these are the cryptic clues.
Well, I think I'll answer it about Greg Rosetsky anyway. I've never let the question dictate what I say before.
Is it to do with discovering that tennis is all about an ancient mathematical equation discovered in the 18th century?
Yes.
Oh, that?
Yeah. Ah. Apparently, the reason tennis players know where the ball is going to be is because it probably landed there before. Now, it's not a big area, a tennis court, and if you play it every day, I think there is a probability it will land twice in the same place. But apparently there's a mathematical equation that you can use to work this out. Unless, of course, you're nandrolone up to the eyeballs.
Do you know who the first actor was to walk through the French windows and say, anyone for tennis?
No.
Humphrey Bogart.
Is that right?
That's yes, on Broadway, wasn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Barry, you were there, weren't you?
I was there. Hum told me that what he actually said in Casablanca, because he was a keen student of early mathematics, was, here's looking at Euclid. True story.
Your research proves great tennis players have the ability to do complex mathematical equations in their head. A similar theory works for most footballers, except for Roy Keane. He uses probability theory based on prior knowledge to help him judge the speed and direction of his opponent's kneecaps. Linda, which royal school visit went off with too much of a bang?
Oh, this is a very sad tale, actually. Sandringham in Norfolk, one of the gaffes of the royal family. Problem estate, I believe, the Sandringham estate. So there was a bit of this gangster action in Sandringham where they decided to go out for a walk on Boxing Day and meanwhile kill a bit of wildlife. Unfortunately, this shooting coincided with playtime at a nearby school where I believe the kids were on a bit of a nature ramble. And the nature they were rambling through started dropping dead all around them. On it went like this until there was just this complete carnage around these kids. And they wrote an angry letter to the Queen, basically saying, what have pheasants ever done to you? Was what one of these little kids plaintively asked, which I thought was rather a good question, actually. And the Queen wrote back, actually, they killed my brother. Bad blood between the Windsors and the pheasants. It's a
That's fair, though. You can choke on a pheasant bone.
Reminds me, Sandy, strangely enough, of the guy who shot a golden eagle, a preserved species, and he was up before the magistrates, and the magistrates said, this is a dreadful thing. And he said, I was shooting pheasants, and it flew into my line of sight, and I shot it by accident. So the magistrate said, a reasonable explanation. He said, but what did you do with it? He said, I ate it. He said, good God, what did it taste like? He said, rather like swan.
I noticed that if you're driving up a lane and there's a pheasant or a grouse on the road in front of you, they run ahead of you like roadrunner. They don't go off to the side. It's very difficult to get them to take themselves out of a place of danger. And I think what it means is that game birds like pheasant and grouse are the only birds too stupid to outwit aristocrats.
Schoolchildren wrote letters of protest to the Queen after dead pheasants rained down on their playground next to the Sandringham estate. The school was particularly worried about the lack of safety precautions after witnessing Prince Philip walking around without either straitjacket or muzzle. Barry.
Oh.
Listen to this.
Your spliff now.
Ah.
Oh. That brought back memories, that song, Simon. Did I ever tell you?
No.
No, ask the question, I'm sorry.
Barry, why will seeing clearly cost the NHS dearly?
NHS? Polish guy went to the opticians. And the guy said, can you read the top line? He said, read it, I know him. Now...
it's the right answer.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not. John Reed, the caring bulldozer. It's going to be up to 15% of the NHS contracted out, isn't it, commissioning to South African outfit called Network or Knitwork or something. I think I'm running out of steam on this answer, but well, I'm outraged.
I don't see well. I've got my glasses here, and I was very
pleased. Who spoke, then?
They're going to get South Africans to come in and do mobile cataract operations.
Yes. Good gracious.
Health Secretary John Reed has defended plans to allow private companies to perform cataract operations around England using two mobile centres. The operations will be performed in two large trucks, a little like burger vans. After approaching the counter of the mobile centre, patients will be asked, do you want eyes with that? Sandy, why should we all stop whining and start taking the tablets?
No, I quite like this, because I don't drink at all, alcoholically. But apparently there's bits and pieces in red wine that's very, very good for you, and they're called something like flavanol or something like that. And it's very, very good for your heart. And apparently there is there's very good cholesterol, OK? And which is, the French have a lot of that, and that gives you the va-va-voom. and there's bad cholesterol. And we have a lot of that. That gives you John Prescott. And, scientists have been able to distill whatever this good thing is into a pill that you can now take instead of...
Sandy, does this mean at last an end to glass of wine misery?
Yes. I can now freely take, Chateau de Papa's Pills, or whatever it is going to be called. The only thing is, it's rubbish with cheese. It's red wine in pill form. I think it'll catch on with Barry. I think it's going to be a big hit.
I'll tell you what's terrible. What I hate is wine snobs. You know, you go around someone's house and they're a bit of a wine expert and they sort of get this bottle out. They give you its whole sort of CV. And then they give you a homeopathic dose. They quaff the lot themselves because they're the only ones with the palate educated. And by that, I'm saying, could you bring me a list of your cleaning products?
But what you can do, Barry, is you can still get lots of red wine pills, put them in water, grind them up, add water, and that's probably the strongest glass of red wine you'd ever have.
Is that what everybody does? Just add water, you mean?
Yeah.
Good God. Excuse me, listeners, I'm jotting that down.
Scientists at the Pavese Pharma Biological Institute in Italy came up with a new pill that offers all the health benefits of red wine without dreadful side effects like enjoying the taste. Moderate drinking has long been known to lead to health benefits, whereas immoderate drinking just leads to journalism. Before we start the final round, here's an advert for a dry cleaning service taken from the Land's End Community magazine.
We do not tear your clothing with machinery. We do it carefully, by hand.
Thanks to Helen and Bob for that. Andy, listen to this. Which Japanese scientists, Andy, have come up with a dream of an idea?
Arioko Nagutake. That's... No, I just made that up. I just thought, which Japanese scientists... Well, would they be Japanese scientists?
They would be, yes.
From Japan.
Do you want the name of the Japanese person? Or do you...
Well, right, what idea have these Japanese scientists come up with?
Don't get touchy with me. I'm just... Radio 4 is a language-based channel.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Japanese scientists have come up with a dream of an idea. What is it?
That's a very good question, Simon.
Well, 2 points to me, then.
I'm reliably informed by Linda. Some Japanese scientists from Japan, in Asia, have come up with a machine. Now, Does it give you dreams or does it interpret your dreams?
Neither.
Neither. Correct. 2 points. That was a rhetorical question. Yeah. I knew it did neither. All right. I'll fess up. I don't know.
It's that they feed in and collect voices and give you a photograph to look at or something, and it's all made formulaic.
He doesn't know either.
No.
You bitch. You bitch, Hamilton. I'm getting there, I'm getting there.
Go on, then.
No, that you... Now, I once met this Japanese guy. No. No, they feed in all the information, or you collate it for them, voices and a photograph and everything, and then they can give you your ideal dream. Isn't it something like that?
Yep.
Apparently, the idea is that you have this thing going at night, and what you say is, my ideal dream would be I meet, I don't know, Brad Pitt or whatever, and what you do is you look at a picture of Brad Pitt, and then they play noises and sounds and so on to make this dream happen. Unfortunately, they've tried it out on lots of the employees, and many of them said it was all very well, and they did have the dream, but the noise of the machine woke them up.
A Japanese toy maker, Takara, this week unveiled the Umemi Kobo, or Dream Workshop, a device which allows users to decide the contents of their nighttime dreams. To use the machine, users must first record, in their own words, how they would like the dream to turn out. This has led to teething problems. When George Bush gave the system a whirl, he dreamed he was with Dolly Parton having mad, passionate sex. Linda, why isn't Cambridge City a big noise in footballing circles?
This is such a sweet story. Cambridge City football team, their little football ground is in the middle of Cambridge and it's right next to an old people's home. Now, as a result of this, the fans have been asked not to shout too loud because it disturbs the folks in the old people's home. They don't like it. So all the City fans are having to go, come on, the City! And the away team as well are being told, keep the noise down.
Yeah.
Could you mind, because there's people trying to sleep. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I think they're taking the wrong attitude. I think they should get the people from the old people's home on board, because I think they'd be great. I'd love to see these elderly kind of yobbos. I'd like them turning into sort of soccer hooligans, really. The saga louts coming in, you know, and just winding each other up, you know, shouting at each other, going, you what? You what? You what? What? It'd be fantastic. The police would be frisking them, going in for packets of dry biscuits and bottles of sweet sherry.
Fans at Cambridge City's ground have been told not to bang drums, blow whistles or even shout after complaints from a nearby old people's home. The noise ban has done nothing, however, to dampen the spirits of the crowd. Last weekend, a magnificent goal sent the home stand into a 3-minute session of rapturous nodding. The last question goes to Sandy, whose flat cap, Sandy, was nearly flattened by friendly fire this week.
Ah, this is the latest foray by our good friends, the Americans, into smart technology. They dropped what can only be aptly described as a dummy bomb on Yorkshire. which I think is sort of an interesting idea. Apparently, it was an American plane. They didn't mean to do this at all. They were trying out new smart technology. And it was a plane called Strike Eagle. And that's pretty much the only thing they missed, in fact, is the...
It was an area where they'd had foot and mouth. They'd had enough to cope with. And I was up there a few years ago, and foot and mouth was at its height, which isn't remotely funny. But still the jokes go on, because a woman said to me, we saw that new film last night, Sheepless in Settle.
I used to live in Yorkshire. I'd lived there for quite a while. They were always finding unexploded bombs in people's gardens. You people standing by them saying, we've been using it to boil black puddings for 20 years.
The Americans have admitted they accidentally dropped a dummy bomb on farmland near Market Weighton, East Yorkshire, during a training exercise last week. The Americans claim it was an accident. Some commentators suggest it was a bungled assassination attempt against Hull MP John Prescott, organised by the English Language Association. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, I'm grateful to Paul Ledbetter, who sent in this snippet from the BBC's website. It says, England's Rugby World Cup hero, Johnny Wilkinson, is to receive an MBE following a minor car crash in Yorkshire.
Linda.
Well, I've got a cutting here, sent in by Tom Goddard from the Thornbury Gazette, and it's the classified ads. Old English sheepdog, large, 242 inches high, purchased in error. Untouched.
Barry, this is from Cambridge, Simon, and thanks to Jane Chisholm. I couldn't resist it because it's from the Cambridge Town Crier. That's what caught my eye. Two girls have been excluded from an independent Catholic school in the heart of Cambridge for an incident connected with cannabis. The six formers from St Mary's School in Bateman Street were excluded when teachers discovered the matter, although headmistress Jane Triffitt insisted they were not caught with the illegal Class B drug. Mrs Triffitt, who refused to comment on the nature of the incident, said, "It wasn't an ongoing investigation. I got wind of it one afternoon."
Sandy.
This is from Steve Padgett, from the fantastic News Shopper of Orpington in Kent. An unusual bus hijacking, which ended when the driver pulled into a police station, will be screened on television. Armed response cops and a police helicopter gave chase when 53-year-old hijacker, unemployed Martin Cass, forced the driver of a 320 bus to take him from Biggin Hill to Bromley at gunpoint. Cass, of Timbertop Road, Biggin Hill, jumped onto the bus in Biggin Hill Valley, ordered passengers off and said to the driver, "Take me to Bromley." Metro bus bosses said the 320 goes to Bromley. Operations manager John Hill said if he had paid his fare, it would have taken him there.
Thank you all. Let's see the final score. Andy and Linda have lots of points, but Barry and Sandy have even more. And before we end the series, here are the instructions to a telescopic trekking pole sent in by Colin McAndrew.
Dry clean your pole after using it and open the locking mechanism. Never use lubricants on or in the shaft. For optimum function, change the expanding nuts on your pole once a year.
Yes. With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith, Barry Pryor and Sandy Toksvig. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, George Poles and Lucy Clark. The series was Sexed Up by Marika Good and the producer was Simon Nichols.